Breaking news at this hour. I have more to share with you on the expected vice presidential pick to top the ticket with Donald Trump. We're going to get into these names, and I'm going to tell you this. Here's a little tease for you. It's not who you would necessarily think. Plus, we have more updates coming into us on P. Diddy's just outrageous, outrageous situation here. Lawsuits that have been filed alleging some really horrific things, making us, me, think this is another version of Epstein, but with a twist, okay? With a twist. We've got CNN finally admitting what we've known all along, that the Democrat Party has become the party of the total elite, the billionaires, as they raised $26 million in New York City just last night, while Donald Trump is the party of the middle class. We're going to get into that, plus the latest and greatest from The View. You're not going to believe. Somebody actually presented them with common sense. They had a good guest on the show. He gave them some common sense stuff, and they totally flipped out. I have to show you this. Welcome. Welcome back to the show. It is Good Friday, of course, a very important day, and we're very much, at least I'm looking very much forward to Easter over the weekend. I'm running an Easter egg hunt for the kids, so that'll keep me busy, and cooking Easter dinner. So wish me luck. This is the Trish Regan Show. I am Trish. We're brought to you in part by LegacyPMInvestments.com, 1-866-589-0560. There they are on the screen, 1-866-589-0560. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, much to get to today. We begin on who will be the vice presidential pick for Donald Trump. You know, he's been stringing us along as only he can, right? Stringing us along. For a while, we heard him tell Fox News just a few months ago that he already had the person. And then he did another interview and they said, oh, you know, is it going to be Tim Scott out of South Carolina? And he said, oh, you know, I really liked him. I really liked him. And Tim's done this and Tim's done that. And he's been great for me, etc. But he didn't say it's going to be Tim. He did another interview and he said, you know, it's not really this sort of be-all, end-all thing, right? Like, that's not going to make or break my candidacy. And I think we all know he's right on that. I mean, Mike Pence, like, nobody was voting for Mike Pence in 2016. Nobody. They were voting, or in 2020, for that matter, right? They were voting for Donald Trump, and Pence was sort of like this loyal soldier by his side until, you know, all H-E-L-L broke loose. And they were voting for Trump. Would Pence have been next in line? I don't know. Donald Trump said this himself. He said, you know, really, the vice president isn't really the whole show, so to speak. It's like you got your headliner and then you get the VP. So the VP is just kind of there to help support the president, which is probably why, if you think about it, all these vice presidents that have gone on to be presidents, they haven't done that well. The current president included, right? I wouldn't exactly call Joe Biden any great shakes. In fact, he's a total disaster. Total disaster in every way, shape, or form. But back to my intel of what I'm hearing. Actually, I'm gonna save my intel. How's that? Again, for a tease, you got to subscribe. I don't want to forget that. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure that you hit the like button. Make a comment. This is a live show, so I'm seeing all your comments in real time. I see some of these names, and you guys are onto something. You're onto something. You're onto something. We will talk about it. But before I give you what I'm hearing, I want to share with you the results of a brand new poll by YouGov that looked at what members of the Republican Party actually want. So here it is, a new poll for the top pick for the vice presidential spot on a Trump ticket. Dun-da-da! Was Ron DeSantis. Governor Ron DeSantis. I'll tell you, he's doing well in Florida right now. You know what? Disney just had to drop its lawsuit against Florida and Ron because Governor DeSantis, he had a few legs to stand on there. Anyway, he is right now the top choice, surprisingly. YouGov polled 1,000 adults, and they listed 15 potentials for Trump's running mate. So let's go through the order here, and we'll kind of handicap them. Ron DeSantis, I'm actually going to, you know, hey, stranger things have happened, but I think there's some bad blood there. And I don't think that the two of them are really going to be able to overcome that. I really don't. I mean, I do think Trump is willing to forgive a lot of people. Heck, you know, Ted Cruz is willing to forgive him after he said some things about his wife. and actually also said some things about his dad. Remember the whole, you know, Ted Cruz's dad killed Kennedy thing? Anyway, so Ted Cruz is coming in at number two, 58%. I'd say there'd be a better chance at Ted Cruz than Ron DeSantis, my own personal intel, and we can discuss why. But I don't think Ted would necessarily take the gig because, you see, Ted wants to be primetime himself. Ted wants the big job. So he might be, well, you know, like maybe he would see this as a pathway to something better. I'm not entirely certain. Ben Carson, I think he likes Ben Carson a lot. But didn't he call him like Sleepy Ben once? I mean, Ben doesn't have necessarily the energy. And I love Ben, by the way. I say this wanting you to know how much I respect him, admire him, think he's absolutely brilliant, and has just done an amazing job for the GOP. But he's older as well. I don't think he's kind of got the sort of energy that you want in that position. At this particular moment in time, Vivek Ramaswamy is fantastic. I was telling you guys about this guy, like way before he was even in the political sphere. I had interviewed him, I want to say 3.5 years ago now, when Woke Inc. came out. And that is near and dear to my heart. As you know, it's a big part of why I started 76 Research, 76research.com. I'm putting that into our chat again today because I want you guys to go there because we've got a brand new 76 report out. http://76research.com. Anyway, Vivek Ramaswamy was all over this woke capitalism and the insanity of what was going on, where people were making choices, not based on anything that, you know, back to common sense, actually made sense as an investor, but they were making choices of what to invest in based on all these other esoteric things that have nothing to do with how well a company is going to perform. And so his point was, this is not good. This is not good for America. And I'm like, buddy, you are onto something. You are spot on. I liked him. It's very rare that I'm kind of at a loss for words, as you can tell, right? Loss for words. I mean, I was so blown away by listening to him and hearing everything that he had to say that, like, it just took a minute to digest it. He also speaks really fast. So he's saying all this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, 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 you're right. And there were so many things that I had been talking about myself. I hadn't heard sort of spoken about in that way until Vivek came on the scene. So I love him, but. Remember Donald Trump said that it's not the whole show, that it's sort of a supporting cast member? He didn't say that specifically. That's my interpretation of what he was saying. So if you need a supporting cast member, you don't want someone who's going to suck all the oxygen out of the room alongside you, right? Because you're supposed to be there drinking up all the oxygen. I mean, he wants big stars. He loves being surrounded by big stars, but that star just can't be brighter than Donald Trump himself. And I don't think Vivek is, by the way. I mean, Vivek needs some maturity. Vivek needs to be out in the circuit longer. Vivek needs to be a little more self-deprecating. I mean, one of Trump's, I think, most endearing qualities is the fact that he can laugh at himself. Do you remember the time when they were talking about changing the regulations on the light bulbs? And he was like, I don't really think that's a good idea because, you know, these new light bulbs, they make me look kind of orange. And you know, the whole crowd was laughing. The reporters, you had to crack a smile at that. You know, he just had the ability to do this in a way that we have not seen among politicians. I mean, it's just very natural. It's very spontaneous. It's very much off the cuff. So that's what Vivek needs. And maybe he'll get it, right? As you get older and you keep doing this and you get a little more sort of comfortable in your own skin. You have some other names on there. Tim Scott, I don't think it's going to be him. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I adore. I've been a big, big proponent of hers. I have known her for a long time. She's the kind of press secretary that actually calls you back and gives you a straight answer, unlike other press secretaries in the White House. She would be terrific. I think she'd also relate with a lot of moms. I think that she could be a possibility. I say that quite earnestly if he decides to go with a woman. But I'm hearing he's kind of like, you know what? I don't need to go with a woman just to go with a woman. I don't need to go with a minority just to go with a minority. Let me just go with the person that I want, that I think is going to help get me elected. So keep that in mind as I tell you more. Tucker Carlson, 46%. My intel tells me Melania Trump likes Tucker a lot. And I get it. I get it because I would suspect that she feels Tucker can help protect her husband. And I'm sure she feels like her husband needs a lot of protection right now. And when I say protect, in that he really understands the media. Been there, done that. He knows exactly what they're going to do. He knows all the players. He can kind of anticipate what's coming and react appropriately. So Tucker Carlson, as a result, is very, very high on Melania's list. I should point out that other members of the family and other members of the campaign team very much like Vivek Ramaswamy too, because I think they see him as a fighter. So Tucker and Vivek bring some very special qualities. You know, RFK Jr. is not happening, right? If anything, this is going to be a big, big help. This is like the wind at his sails that he needs, because all the polls show that with RFK Jr. running with the ex-wife of one of the Google guys as his VP, that RFK Jr. is actually going to take away a lot of the votes from Biden. So that's actually really, really good news for Donald Trump. Kristi Noem, beautiful woman, articulate woman. I know how many of you guys like her. She certainly, you know, she could be there. I think he'd love the look of that Christmas card, right? Can you imagine? The president and Kristi, it would be an interesting choice. I don't know if she gets him a lot in the way of votes way out there in Nevada. I don't know as that is. And he's, you know, I know the way he thinks, right? So he's thinking, what do I need to really win this thing? And the person I'm going to tell you about is actually not on that list. Actually, there's a couple people that aren't on that list. But before I get to who I think could help him get to the finish line, let's look at this. Let's look at who is at the bottom of the list, the very, very bottom. And that would be led by none other than Vice President Mike Pence. Highest disapproval rating. Look at that, you guys, 54%, highest of all. And I know why. And it's not even the J6 stuff. It is this. Let's go to the single moment in time when Tucker Carlson single-handedly ruined the political career of Mike Pence. And I guarantee you, Mike Pence was all agitated. Shows you what a good interviewer Tucker Carlson is. He'd be good as a lawyer, right? You get the witness all agitated. He got all stressed out, probably in this interview with Tucker Carlson, that he wasn't listening, as many of these politicians fail to do. They don't listen. They don't listen to the question. He's talking his narrative, and oh, he doubled down on it. It was god-awful. This ruined Mike Pence. Watch.
January, we'll let somebody transfer some jets.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President. Have you? I know you're running for president. You are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States. And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. And yet your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks. Right. I think it's a fair question to ask, like, where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm running for president of the United States because I think this country's in a lot of trouble. I think Joe Biden has weakened America at home and
okay. He makes no sense. I mean, literally, he's like, oh, Tucker, that's not my concern. It's like, and then he doubles down. I've heard that routine from you before. It's not my concern. You're running for president of the United States. You don't think it's your concern that Americans aren't getting the attention they need? Oh, my goodness gracious. So that was the end of Mike Pence. And that is why, ladies and gentlemen, he is the least favored pick for vice president. You have nothing to worry about. Vice President Mike Pence, former Vice President Mike Pence, is not getting anywhere near to that job. The other person, interestingly, who came in second was Nikki Haley. And I think we all know why on that one, at 49%. She might actually have really hurt her chances with the GOP in the future. I mean, she better hope for that big gig at Northrop Grumman or something. Boeing, get on the board, get a few board jobs, a few speeches, and hope for the best. Third was Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's interesting. So that tells me that everyday members of the GOP, even though they may like her, they know that that's going to be too polarizing a move, which I would agree with. And so they're coming back and saying, okay, who do we need? Who do we need? Well, Donald Trump told us it's not going to be someone who's like whiz bang. So I think that means we can forget about Tucker Carlson. Sorry, Melania. I like him too. But, you know, I think that that's going to be too much whiz bang. And I think that Tucker would tell you himself, and he said this as much, that he doesn't really want to do that. Like he prefers to be on his side of things. I get it, right? I prefer to be on my side of things too. Who actually wants to have to do it? It's much easier to just Monday morning quarterback. And then there's another Vivek again that I know that the family likes, and I know that the staff likes, but it's too much whiz bang as well, right? So if you want someone that's like steady Eddie and you say, I don't care about the whole female thing. I don't care about the whole race thing. I'm just going to go with the person that I want. Then you might actually be looking, and here's a name. I have mentioned this before, you guys, and you're always like, you know, but what if you could get New York? What if you could get New York's electoral votes? What if New York were to swing? Everybody's like, oh, it's never going to happen. He said he's going for New York. He's come right out and said it. You look at what went down yesterday, the contrast between the three presidents at Radio City Music Hall getting interviewed by Stephen Colbert, a famous comedian, and making $26 million in the process there for the Democrat Party and for Biden's campaign versus what Donald Trump did, going outside New York City just a bit, out onto Long Island to pay his respects to the fallen officer who got killed just doing his job. Just doing his job. Routine traffic stop. A one-year-old baby, now without a father. And Donald Trump took care of the mortgage on that family's home and gave them some additional money to help support them in this difficult time. You want to compare and contrast that, and I'll tell you, he's serious about the country, about the people in this country, and about the state of New York. And New Yorkers aren't going to forget that. You also have the Israel situation going on. And he's always been pro-Israel. This is a president, remember, who relocated our diplomatic headquarters there. Because every president had promised to do it and no one was willing, and he did. So he's got a commitment to Israel. And they're going to say he's this, that, and the other, right? We've heard all the hate speech from the left. And yet he's got a son-in-law who's Jewish, a daughter who converted to Judaism, and grandchildren that are Jewish. Well, what if you picked a Jewish vice president? What if you picked Lee Zeldin? He's kind of like Steady Eddie, right? Not going to take all the oxygen out of the room. He's been a loyal supporter. He's available. I would not be surprised. And he's going to raise a lot of money in New York. And then you got Florida, because that's where Donald Trump is relocated to. And you got New York. Those are a lot of electoral votes. There has been discussion about Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio said, no one from the campaign has talked to me about it. I believe that. I don't actually think the Marco Rubio stuff is real. I do think that they're trying to pull in maybe more Hispanics. Hispanics in general have been very positive on Donald Trump, so he's got that going for him. But I don't think it's going to be Marco Rubio. I don't think it's going to be Ron DeSantis. I love Byron, right? Byron Donaldson. We've had him on the show, and he's been just terrific, and I love him. I thought he might be in the running for Speaker of the House. He's young. I think he'd be great. I think he's got a huge future. But you get this Florida issue going on, which Don, I see in the chats, you know, he's always talking about the electoral votes. And, you know, you kind of have to do some maneuvering that you may not need to do if you're going after New York. So watch Lee. Know that I love everyone on that list. And I think all of them would be perfectly acceptable. But if you're playing to win, do you think outside the box? You don't do the, okay, we have to go with the woman. We'd have to go with the minority. We have to do this. We have to do that. I mean, heck, James Carville said it the other day. The Democrat Party has become this party of just whiny, naggy, annoying women. They're like, okay, the the women's vote, the women of color's vote is going to decide this election. And that particular demographic is like, okay, you can't eat meat. You have to call everyone they, you have to give your gender pronoun. I mean, on and on and on, right? There's all these rules and all these regulations that you have to live by. And by the way, who gets shortchanged in that? Men, especially white men, white middle-class men. The Democrat Party doesn't want you. And they keep telling you that over and over and over and over again. I mean, James Carville, who ran Clinton's campaign, at least he's smart enough to recognize that. He's like, this is not going to fly. And he's right. It's not going to fly. And if Donald Trump can take in New York and he's got all the men and a lot of women, too, you'd be surprised. Then I actually think he's got quite a path to the White House. You throw in RFK and it looks even better, which is why the Democrats are freaking out. But there is a sort of juxtaposition here between what we're seeing from the left and this elitism that's become elitism on steroids. I mean, they used to talk about limousine liberals like they were few and far between, and now they're just everywhere. Including in New York City just last night, while the former president of the United States was there attending for no money, the wake of a fallen officer. And so the contrast was so startling that even the host on CNN had to admit it. I mean, take a look at this clip. I want you to see it because you can just see the anchor looking at her colleague like, really? Did you have to go there? Did you have to? Well, it's obvious, okay? It's obvious what's going on. The elites have taken full control of the Democrat Party, and the rest of America's like, hey, what about me? What about me? It's like when Tucker was asking Pence about what about the average American, and Pence says, it's not my fault. Well, buddy, that just scored you a one-way ticket out of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has become the party of upward mobility. It is the party of the everyday American who aspires to something bigger and better. And the Democrats are the Marie Antoinette or Nancy Pelosi, let them eat cake party. Let's watch CNN having to admit the obvious.
This fallen NYPD officer. And I'm going to read the statement here of what the Trump campaign put out. President Trump will be honoring the life and legacy of Officer Diller and paying his respects to his family, friends, and the NYPD for their terrible loss. Meanwhile, the three stooges, Biden, Obama, and Clinton, will be at a glitzy fundraiser in the city with their elitist, out-of-touch celebrity benefactors. Now, a lot of that is just Trumpian language, but there is something to the fact that Donald Trump is often trying to appeal to working-class voters, and he does appeal to working class voters, and he has the ability to paint Democrats, and particularly when it comes to Clinton, Obama, and now Biden, as elitist and out of touch. So while, yes, this statement is very Trumpian, they're trying to contrast these two things, there is something that works when Donald Trump does this.
Right. It's a very...
Yes, because it's true. Okay. Like, I'm sorry, when you're there charging $500,000 to go get your picture with the president, and Annie Leibovitz is taking the picture. I mean, I'm sorry, that is out of touch, ladies and gentlemen. And don't forget, money's not everything. I mean, he doesn't have the kind of money that Biden does, and certainly not now, not after the $26 million they just raised. He doesn't have that. But he has the support of everyday folks. And so I think when he does things like, hey, UFC, or any of these events where he gets exposed to a lot of people, the sneaker con, right? That was an interesting choice. He's getting out there, connecting with everyday folks, and they're rallying around him. They know he doesn't have the money, maybe, to go and rent the big stadiums right now because you're paying so much in legal costs. $175 million is due. Think about that. In a matter of days. So it's just wild. Absolutely wild. Let me turn to another story right now, because something else that's wild to me is how sort of obtuse some members of this elitist political class really are. And that would include, say, well, Disney and ABC, and it would include the people that are making Star Wars, which apparently, like, it may not be happening anymore. I'll talk about that. And it would include a show that I hope you don't watch that airs on late morning TV called The View. So Whoopi and her friends had someone on this week who is an author who's Black and trying to encourage Americans to get away from identity politics that's all about race. Imagine that. So immediately, when you are a Black man or woman and you're actually talking up a narrative that is not hook, line, and sinker with the Democrat Party, you are persona non grata. This guy was persona non grata on The View when he dared to challenge the narrative of this DEI woke nonsense that's being spoon-fed to everyone. You got to apologize because you were born the way you were. He said that we got to actually move forward, not back. And I want you to see the reaction.
First question that I should ask you to do is explain to folks what you mean by this. Arguments for a colorblind America. What do you mean when you say that?
So a lot of people equate colorblindness to I don't see race or to pretending not to see race. I think that's a big mistake. We all see race, right? And we're all capable of being racially biased, so we should all be self-aware to that possibility. My argument is not for that. My argument is that we should try our very best to treat people without regard to race, both in our personal lives and our public policy.
Of course.
And the reason I wrote this book, thank you. The reason I wrote this book is because in the past 10 years, it has become very popular to, in the name of anti-racism, teach a kind of philosophy to our children and in general that says your race is everything. Right. And I think that is the wrong way to fight racism. And that's why I wrote this book at this time.
Can I? I'm sorry, baby. Yeah. Can I just point out that there is a reason for that?
You know, it gets better.
When I went to school, getting any information about anyone's race was not taught. No history. There was no Black history. None of those things were taught. And here in America, 100 years ago, when I was a young woman, that's how people saw you. That's how they judged you. So I think, I don't want to say it's your youth, but I think you have a point, but I think you have to also take into consideration what people have lived through.
You're being diplomatic.
In order to understand why there has been such a
point. In other words, you stupid kid, you don't know a damn thing.
Racial things like women couldn't go to get into colleges. If you are a Black person, there are a lot of colleges wouldn't accept you. Trying to equal the playing field. I think that's what a lot of folks have been trying to do. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think that's your experience and that's valid. You know, as a counterpoint, when I was in fifth grade, we all watched Roots together.
Yeah.
In public school.
Yeah.
So these are different experiences. I think it's also different generations. It's different parts of the country, right? We have very different cultures all living together in one country. So I'm not going to deny that. But I think I view this notion of a colorblind society similar to the idea of a peaceful society, which is to say it's an ideal. It's a North Star. And the point is not that we're ever going to get there. We're not going to touch it. But we have to know when we're going forward and when we're going backwards. And we're going backwards when we're doing woke kindergarten in San Francisco. You know, with you didn't hear about this story?
No, but wait, I want to get to the part of the book. You believe that public policies that address socioeconomic.
Can we fast forward, Drew, just a little bit to Sunny? Because she just loses it on the guy. And here we go. Okay, so she starts questioning him. And this I want you to see.
Poverty as the thing to be addressed.
That part is true, but as you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of Dr. King, I know his daughter, Bernice, right? So I'm going to get to my question.
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
I think the premise is fundamentally flawed. You claim that colorblindness was the goal of the civil rights movement based upon Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, you know, content of character versus the color of skin. Bernice, Dr. King's daughter, points out that 4 years after giving that speech, actually, Dr. King also said this: a society that has done something special against the Negro for hundreds of years must now do something special for Negroes. He also said in 1968, it was about less than a week before he was assassinated, this country never stops to realize that they owe a people kept in slavery for 244 years. So rather than class, he did write about that earlier on. Right before his death, he made the argument for racial equality and racial reparations. And so your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
He's not a Republican.
So how do you... You've said that you're a conservative.
No, you did.
You actually said that in a podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I said I was a conservative.
Yes, you did. So, but my question to you, is, how do you respond to those critics?
Okay, let's give him an answer.
First thing, I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro, that's from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was, and it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged, a broad class-based policy.
But he also says you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says
I'm not going to torture you with the entire thing.
Everyone should go read the book.
But you get the point. It's like a guy goes on there and actually makes sense, is actually trying to bring everybody together and say, hey, let's like quit being so arcane about stuff. Like we've worked through a lot, like let's celebrate that and move on to the future. And everybody wants to cling to the past. Why? Politics. Politics. And they're going to do more and more of it. Ladies and gentlemen, Barack Obama was the master of this. And he's in Joe Biden's ear. There was another piece in the New York Times just the other day. He's talking to him. He's advising him. Double down on identity politics. You know, you're never going to get ahead in life if the white man's keeping you down. And that's what you're going to hear over and over and over again. So I just want to warn you, but what's amazing about it is that they're now terrified because Black America is looking at the life they got thanks to Bidenomics and saying, you know what? Trump was better. And that is why Joe Biden is down 20 points, 20 points in the polls with African Americans. Because you know what? I'm sorry, this guy's right. Sonny's wrong. Whoopi's wrong. I watched Roots in fifth grade too. Okay, so maybe I'm a different generation. I'm the generation that doesn't sit there and think, okay, I can't do this because I'm a woman. I don't sit there and think I can't do anything because I grew up in a small town in New Hampshire, very sheltered little place, a dirt road, blah, 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 and I'm a girl. I never thought that. And that guy doesn't think because he's black that he can't do something. And yet they're all out there trying to pretend like if you're female, if you're black, if you're trans, if you're gay, if you're this, if you're that, if you're this, or you're, that you can't get ahead in America. That's not the country we live in. We've been through a struggle for a reason. We've come out the other end and we have succeeded in a masterful way. It's exciting. It's who we are. I have to leave you for a moment, just for like 6 minutes. I'm going to come back live again right here because I want to talk about Fox News and its latest debacle of a lawsuit. I want to talk about Disney. I mean, they're talking about canceling the Star Wars show, for goodness sakes. This is what this woke ideology does. Let's hope that Nelson Peltz is able to have some sharp elbows. And I do want to talk about Diddy because this is a mystery that's ongoing. And then I want to open it up to all of you. We're also going to have a team member thing, so I'm live three times today. Just give me, we'll call it 10 minutes. I got to go over and do my friend Chris Salcedo's show over on Newsmax, but I will be back with you with much, much more. So see you shortly. Make sure you hit the bell, subscribe, and you'll know exactly when I'm back here in about 10 minutes.